We're doing Pirkei Avot. We're up to the fifth chapter, the 14th Mishnah. And the Mishnah is continuing along the themes of the previous Mishnayot. Arba midot bolchei levet midrash. There are four types of people who go to the Beis Medrash, they go to learn. Holech veinose. You have a guy who goes to Beis Medrash, but he doesn't learn a word. At the end of the day, he knows about as much as he knew going out as he did coming in. He hears others learning. So, schar halicha biyado, being that he went, he made the attempt. So, at the end of the day, the wages of the traveling time that he has. He can't say he has the wages of learning because he didn't really learn. But at least he made the attempt. Oseh ve'ino holech. You have someone who learns at home. He doesn't have to go anywhere. He lives right above the Beis Medrash. He wakes up, he rolls into the Beis Medrash. So he produces, he learns, but he has no traveling time. So then, schar maaseh biyado. He gets the wages for the action. You know, he actually learned. Holech ve'oseh, if someone actually makes the journey and produces chasid, Lo lech velo osef, he doesn't even make the journey, so then rasha, that's a wicked person. So it's interesting that the Mishnah calls these people chasid and rasha, meaning if you don't even make the attempt, that's called a wicked person. But let's look at the other side of it. If you make the attempt, then there's what to be said for that. One of the greatest frustrations people have in marriage is that feeling you're not doing it. I told you 1,000 times, put your socks in the hamper. How come every night you leave your socks by the side of the bed? I asked you 1,000 times, don't squeeze the tube of toothpaste from the middle. Or if you finish the milk, let me know. I'll pick up more in the grocery. There are little things where we beg our spouse and we don't get anywhere. Do we really not get anywhere? Or do we make small headway and because we want the final product, we don't notice the small headway? We have a system that we've discussed in the past about when to criticize. So we said the first rule is don't. Second rule is don't. And the third rule is don't. And try to find the positive and ways to strengthen in a positive way. And if after everything is said and done, for whatever reason, you've tried the first four, and you still think there's a point in saying something, so you have to realize the price you're going to pay. Every criticism is taken personally, whether it's personal or not. Spouses take it personally. And intrinsic to the criticism is the understanding it was more important to you to hurt my feelings and criticize me than to forgo this point. And whether you mean it that way or not, that's the way it's going to be taken. Now, if he, in spite of all that, you think you should talk, okay. So then we have rules. Number one, choose a time when you're close together. Choose a time when things are positive between you. All too often people criticize when things go bad, so then they have a whole speech. And not only that, but you don't even squeeze the toothpaste from the middle like I've asked you. You never do anything, I say. You know, I asked you not to drop your socks by the bed and you never stop. That's not productive. That's venting. That's pouring out our anger on another person. But if we want to be productive, so then true good criticism, again, assuming you've already tried the first 5 options, so then we have to find a good time when things are good, when the couple is permitted, she's not during her period, the couple can be close. And then the next point is to mention it as a one-time occurrence, not as a recurring theme. If you point out 15 different examples, so then you've cornered the person and they're going to say, okay, you're right, you proved it. This is the type of person I am. You're stuck with me. Take it or leave it. You'll get nowhere that way. The key is to take one example, two examples at best, and usually it's better to take one example and not two. And then you have to come with solutions. You have to come to the person and say, that's the third point within criticism, to be able to show the person different ways to get out of this habit, to change. And the fourth is to take upon ourselves something of equal weight at the same time. Because all too often, if we sit on the sidelines and we're just expecting change, so then we get very frustrated when it doesn't happen. But if we decide we're going to work on something that's equally difficult at the same time, so then we'll see how we don't really succeed, and we'll have more patience when the other side doesn't succeed. And then, final, and that's where it connects to our Mishnah, the final point is, when there's even a slight improvement, you have to praise it. You have to be able to compliment and say, wow, I really appreciate you took that step. Look at how the Mishnah views a guy who makes the journey to Beis Medrash but doesn't produce. So we'd say, hey, bum, get your act together. Why aren't you learning anything? The Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah says he has the wages that he made the effort. He went to yeshiva. He didn't learn anything, but he went. Who's a wicked person? He's a guy who doesn't start making any effort. And it's rare that you'll find a person like that. Although this Mishnah is applicable to men, it is more applicable to women. Because women have a greater tendency to look at what men do and find the shortcomings. You clean the house and she says, why don't you do behind the doors? You clean the toilets and she says, why don't you do behind the toilet? You do the shopping and she says, that's not the type of mayonnaise I wanted. So be prepared for it. It's a weakness, meaning what usually happens is that over time, men come to a conclusion and they say, I'm willing to do it if you're not in the room. You want me to do dishes? I'll do the dishes, but you can't comment afterwards on how I do the dishes. Let me do it my way. I know many a husband that said to the wife, I'm willing to clean the house on the condition that I don't get comments afterwards. I'll be happy to help. It's frustrating to do the work and then hear about all the things that you did wrong. Yeah, and the wife's going to say, so just do it right. Okay, that's not a fair answer. It's not. But it goes both ways. At the end of the day, this happens to be a Mishnah, which women, this idea is something which women have a harder time with than men. We could explain why, but I'm not sure it's so relevant. At the end of the day, it's something both sides have to work on to see the positive, be able to show appreciation for the positive. The Mishnah only calls someone negative if they haven't started making any effort. And you won't find a person like that. Within marriage, everyone makes an effort. It's just that they don't get far enough. And then it gets very frustrating. I thought we agreed you'd fill the gas tank every night. But I did 4 weeks out of six. Yeah, but those 2 days, I did 4 days out of six. Right, but those 2 days destroyed my morning. Okay, so which way do you view it? Both are true. It's not that one's more accurate. The Mishnah teaches us, look at what's good. And the truth is, if you get into that habit, then you're much happier in marriage. And it is a habit. It's a habit, it's a form of speaking as well. One of the challenges I often tell couples, I challenge you to compliment your spouse 50 times each day. Keep a list. Now what happens is, you look for ways to compliment. And in the beginning, it's fake. But over time, it becomes real. You could do it. What really usually happens in a marriage is you can criticize 50 times a day and you could go a whole day without saying one compliment. It's very easy to find there are many things to criticize. Why don't you put the milk away? Are you still using this cream cheese? You know it's going to go sour if you leave it out. Could you wipe your feet before you walk in after it rains? There are endless opportunities to criticize, but you know what? There are also endless opportunities to compliment. It's a question of habit. And by challenging people 50 times a day, they look at me like I'm crazy. Yeah, compliment her on, you put on that shirt so nicely today. Okay, fine. I appreciate you changed the kid's diaper. Why not? If she won't change the kid's diaper, you're going to express your frustration that there's a stinky kid running around the house for the last hour, right? So then why not say a word of appreciation when she does it? And this is really one of the stick points in many, many marriages. It's what makes life difficult. We have a very hard time living with constant criticism, and we need the exact opposite. And you know what? At the end of the day, we deserve the compliments. We don't deserve the criticism. We don't. It's true, we're not perfect. Neither side is perfect. But both sides deserve the compliments. So it's a matter of getting into that habit. Mishnah Tet Vav. Hundred percent.
The idea is just to
adjust. What do they criticize you for not criticizing them? Like they say it's healthy to fight. And they always think that you're giving in, or you're always. It could be dead annoying. Like sometimes you want someone to yell at you, and you see that they're just taking everything you're saying. It's not being such a pushover. You know,
I don't think one has to be a pushover. I don't see those as the two options. I think that one can.
What do you mean? It's accepting. You know. Not
you don't have to give in. Not criticizing doesn't mean being a pushover. But there's a marked difference between criticizing and having an opinion. You could say you don't even have to give in your opinion. You can very easily say, this is what I want. And she'll say that's what she wants, and then you'll work out which way you're going to go. Doesn't have to mean you're going to be a pushover. Criticism is when I show disapproval in the other person, and that's what's unkind and what really divides two people. Whereas compliments is when I show appreciation, and that's what brings two people together. At the end of the day, this is a very pivotal rule in marriage. People overlook it because they think that the criticism is impersonal. It's not about you. Don't you realize that you... I'll give you a simple example. Your wife makes spaghetti, okay? And she pours out the spaghetti through the strainer and serves the spaghetti. And after the meal, she asks you to wash the dishes. And when you come to wash the strainer, you know that if you clean that strainer right after you pour it through the spaghetti, it cleans easy. And if you don't, then all the spaghetti sticks. And now it's a harder job. So now you think it's not personal if you tell your wife, I'd much rather if you told me right after you poured through the spaghetti that you wanted me to wash the spaghetti, the strainer, because it's much easier to wash it then. That's not personal, right? I'm willing to sign that any wife you tell that line to, she might not say anything, but there's a twinge of hurt because at some point you're disapproving. What would be the smart way to get the same results? Next time she pours it through the strainer,
you go wash it
right away. Mm-hmm. Go and wash it and then tell her, if I forget next time, do you mind reminding me? Because it went so easy this time, do you mind reminding me to do it right after you pour through the spaghetti? You got the same results, but you didn't show disapproval for what she did. So you don't have to be a pushover. You can get to the same place. But you've gotten there without hurting her feelings. And this is, by the way, this is a rule for all interpersonal relationships. I met last week with... there were partners. And one of them... I met with one of them. And he started telling me why he's going to break the partnership and leave the partnership. And I heard him out. And I said, you guys just started this partnership 2 weeks ago. I hear everything you're saying, but I think there's room to understand your partner, and I explained to him how I view it. Why don't you try hearing his side of it? See. And then see if you can positively affect the reach where you want to go. And he said, no, it's nice to see things positively, but... I said, yeah, but if you can attain the same thing by being positive without coming head on, so you'll reach the same place. And that's what I'm saying, you don't have to be a pushover. You could have your goal and reach that goal, but you can try to reach that goal pleasantly. It's not about being a pushover. On the contrary, some people even say that my way of doing it is manipulating. You're not manipulating. You're just presenting the things in a nice way. But you will get what you want. And on the contrary, you go the other route, chances are you won't get it. You'll have expressed the easy way. you'll have expressed what you feel on the moment, but you won't really get what you want. Yeah.
A couple of quick questions. Not so much in that if you do something, but if it's something you don't do, if you leave your socks on the floor, if you use the toothpaste, at some point, to look on it from the other side, if someone says, you know, please pick up your socks, and you don't. It's not that it's not a major hassle to pick up the socks, but it's that you don't respect me or love me enough to do as I'm requested. So it's not necessarily a criticism, but how do you put the two of those together so that you're not criticizing, but there's a little part of it that says, I've asked you to do this 3 or 4 times, and I get the feeling it's because you just, I'm not important enough to you. So there's that, how do you deal with that? Because that's where it really is coming from.
So, let's go back to one of my first dates. The girl threw the following question at me. What do you think is the formula for couples working out an argument? Working out an argument. So I said to her then, and I still think it's true, that one of the key points in every argument is whether we take one step, and that is the point you raised. Meaning, in every argument, there is that annoying feeling, you don't care.
You don't care.
Otherwise, you would do it. And I think we have to begin every discussion with the following introduction. I know you care, and I know you don't want to do something that hurts me. Those have to be the basics. Before we enter, we have to postulate that. I know you care, and I know you wouldn't do something to hurt me. So now, being that you're a person who's a caring person, and you care about me, and you wouldn't do something that hurts me, and I told you numerous times, please don't leave the socks on the floor, so what's going on that you're still leaving the socks on the floor? But it's mind over matter, because it's very easy to take that step. And very often we do take that step. I even say it sharper. I usually say, if you want to understand the conversation between a man and a woman, so you have to stick in certain things in the conversation. There was a Harvard professor who wanted to research how family businesses work. And what they discovered is that in every board meeting, there are a lot of conversations that are happening. Meaning John could say, I think we should expand the business this way. And Jill is going to say, nah, that endangers our assets. We can't afford to do that now. What John is saying is, I finally want to get credit for something in this family. And what Jill is saying is, John, you're such a dope. We should never listen to any advice you say. If you're going to say east, I'm going to say west. And there's a lot of that going on in family businesses. Should be that way, shouldn't be that way. Practically, there's a lot of baggage with your relationships. And I think that, so they were discussing framing the conversation. You have to know the context of the relationships. I say the same thing in marriage. If I say this to husbands often. You have to view every sentence that your wife says with the following introduction. Do you love me? That's it. So now the question's different when your wife asks you, do you want to eat ice cream together tonight? Now frame it. Do you love me? Do you want to eat ice cream together tonight? What's the answer? It's pretty obvious. Again, do you love me? Do you like the dress I'm wearing now? Just add that sentence to everything. Now, you want to understand the man? Add a different sentence. Do you respect me? Do you value what I say? What do you think about the job I did on the sink? Do you respect me? Do you want me to take the car into the shop for you? Do you respect me? Do you value who I am? Yeah, we each have that backdrop to what we're really saying. And if you view it in that context, so that's a lot of what's going on. But at the end of the day, both sides have to accept as a given. The other side loves me, and the other side does not want to hurt me. Now I have certain things which I don't understand. So either they don't appreciate that I mean it, or they don't appreciate that that this bothers me, or this is a part of who they are. I'll tell you a funny story. I'm sitting behind a couple on the bus, and the husband asks his wife, "What's the time?" Simple question, right? What does she answer? True story. Why do you want to know? That's why I thought you'd know the answer.
Psychologist. He married a psychologist.
So he looks at her and he says, "You know, I think you're the only person on the bus that if I ask them what the time is, they're going to ask me, why do you want to know?" And he turns to the man across the aisle, happens to be me, and asks me, "What? Excuse me, sir, what's the time?" No, I didn't tell him, "Why do you want to know?" I didn't do that. But let's stop. Let's pause and rewind. Let's say this is going to erupt into a fight. Now she looks at him and says, "Oh, so you don't want me to tell you the time? Don't ask me again." And he's going to say, "No, I didn't know it was so complicated and that I'd have to give a whole justification for why I want to know the time, but if it's so complicated, so I'll get it from someone else." And she's going to say, "Okay, don't talk to me, just ignore me." And he's going to say, "I didn't say I'm going to ignore you, I just said I want a simple answer." She's going to say, "Right, I understand, you just want an excuse, you can ignore me, it's okay, goodbye." She gives him the silent treatment, and he's like, "What does she want in my life, right?" Okay, so you can understand that this is evolving. Let's rewind and let's start again.
No,
they didn't explode. They just laughed. I mean, the couple, like, she realized that it was a little ridiculous. I'll give you the full answer in a second, but I first want to give the backdrop. Let's say the husband comes to you and says, "What kind of wife did I marry?" What are you going to say? Here's the formula: she loves you. She wouldn't do something to upset you. So then why did she ask me, why do I want to know? Why is this such a complicated question? So there's something you don't understand about her, or she doesn't understand about you, or both. But she didn't do it to annoy you. And she's not looking to give you a hard time. So what? Yes. So one, well, it wasn't a conversation opener. Two, at every given moment, she wants to know what you're thinking. It's part of what caring women do. So when a husband goes out to take the garbage and the wife happens to be in the other room, you could understand there's going to be a whole conversation. "Honey, where are you going?" "I'm taking out the garbage." But he's like, why did she ask? Like, what's the big deal? Right? Because if she'd be walking out the door, he would be like, okay, you know, bye. Okay, so there are a lot of things we don't understand about one another, and we're not going to be able to cover all of them. But if we have this approach, the spouse loves me and does not want to do something that hurts me, so I've taken the first step to attaining some kind of understanding. And if I don't have that, then even something like that about the watch, so I've heard couples swear that their spouse is the most annoying person in the world. Mm-hmm. And then when they start describing to you what's going on, it's classical. There's no difference between her and any other wife. It's just that he doesn't have the patience, or he doesn't understand. She doesn't understand him. She doesn't understand that if every time he asks for the time, she's going to ask him what he wants. So it's going to annoy him a lot. And that's normal for a man.
That's the way of her take interest in him?
Partially.
What
it could be also because she's looking for any opening to have a conversation with him. Because for women, any form of conversation is closeness. For men, conversations are
get something done,
right?
And for women?
For women, it's for the sake of having conversation. Because any conversation connotes closeness. So they want any type of conversation. So it's long as there's conversation.
It's the nine coven they have.
Okay, yeah.
Did you say pass the salt? What do you mean? Pass the salt. We don't. You go. Basically, yeah.
Uri, what? Yeah.
I was saying, like, you know, some of these things I've noticed is that, like, this some guys will like complain to me about their wives, and they're just writing things like, I'm actually looking forward to, like, oh, my wife, she's making all these cakes and all this food, and it's getting me fat. Like, it's actually a complaint. I'm like, oh, I'm looking forward to that. And I look at myself, my wife talks to me all the time. I'm like, well, really, I'm looking forward to someone to talk to. Is that normal, or is that, like, no, you're weird for looking forward to those kinds of things? So.
Look forward to conversations for the first few years and then after that.
Yeah, I guess his answer is pretty on the mark.
I said you look forward to the conversations because you're not with someone now. And after a few years, you're going to start going, maybe not so much conversation.
So that's like about how to make it as magical as it first was.
Well, it's not magical, but if... Okay, the beginning of my marriage, when I come home, she says, how did it go? I say, fine. It means there's nothing you have to fix. But I would ask her, how did your day go? Is there anything broken that I have to look after? And 2 hours later, she was up to coffee time. And she talked to me, and I can't do this. That's not how I function. But women, conversation is how, it's for women, it's more intimate than actual intimacy.
100%. I've never said that line, because I don't say that line online.
Yeah.
But when I'm not online, I say that.
Oh, yeah, that's one thing I don't think women understand about guys. Is that's one way we reach out to women. So it's like it cuts both ways.
It cuts both ways, right.
Yeah, like for women, we don't understand their conversational method of getting close to us. They don't understand our method of getting close to them. That's kind of what it is.
Yeah, but after a while, you realize that Hashem could have made men marry men and women marry women, but Hashem made it that we will develop through marriage, meaning we have what to learn from them. Those differences, as difficult as they are, they make us grow, even though they're classical differences. Yeah.
So in that situation, you ask what time they give you, why do you want to know? Apply with anything, you ask them, whatever, and
it turns
into the whole thing, and it's not being productive. How do you get through that?
I don't understand the question.
If you want to know the time, and she's just not going to give you the time, it's just becoming a whole thing. You just want to quickly, on the go, what's the time? I don't know, how do you find your way around these sort of things? You're just trying to find something.
Okay, so that's a fair question. You ask what the time is, and she says, why do you want to know? And you're sort of in a rush. So I'll give you the formula. One, smile. Okay? Because the first thing you're thinking of doing is letting out a roar and not smiling. It's like, And number two, play it her way. If you want to, you'll have to consider whether you want to say, like this guy said, I think you're the only person on the planet who demands an explanation when I ask the time. But I don't think it's, I don't think it's going to happen to you every time you ask for the time. And you will learn either the short way or the long way, but you will learn that the best way to get an answer quickly is to play it her way. Because if you're going to try to play it your way, you're going to spend a lot of time appeasing her. Because the way it's going to play out is, let's play it the other way. Chaim asks his wife, Shana, what's the time? Shana says, why do you want to know? Chaim turns to her and says, for crying out loud, why do I have to explain it to you? Just tell me what the time is. Now, one of two things are going to happen. Either he will get an icy reading of the time, like if words could kill, he's going to hear, it is 2:30 in the afternoon. Goodbye. And now he's going to have hours of appeasing.
What does that mean?
or he's not even going to get the answer. Go find out yourself. I'm stuck here under the washing machine trying to fix it, and I need to know if I'm going to make mincha. Notice he already gave her all the answers she wanted to know. And you gain nothing by doing it the other way. So I'm not even talking from a midos perspective. I'm not even talking about being a nice person. and doing it her way. I'm talking about an egocentric perspective. For your sake, you will learn, either painfully or smoothly, that your best bet is play it her way. Now, what if you want to, you could just say, never mind. That's one of the tricks that I tell husbands sometimes. If you want your wife's attention, that's the way to get it. You say, you see you're trying to tell her something and she's not with her. Every time you try, she's not with you. So you say, Shana, never mind. That's it. You're not going to leave that room without telling her what you wanted to say. So long as you tried saying, she has a million other things to do. The second it becomes something which, never mind, we'll talk about it later. It doesn't matter. It's not so important. You arouse the curiosity. But that's part of why they're also asking you, why do you want to know the time? It's either because they want conversation or because they want to be a part of your life. That's to them, that's part of being close. Yeah.
So when they ask you for stuff like the time, let me phrase my question here. Should you as a man then make every effort to be part of the conversation with her? Like, instead of just saying like, oh, I'm a man, she's a woman, I just do things my way, she just thinks her way, should you then make the effort to, well, I know it's important for me for her to do stuff for me. I would like her to do those things for me. Let me do things for her. And so you start talking to her, and even though you may not be feeling it and you don't want to talk to her, you should still do that for her, even though you may not be feeling like you want to do it for her?
I don't know if revolving around time, but yes, one of the obligations a husband has to his wife is ona. Ona literally means time. Halachically, ona is defined as a certain amount of intimacy that a husband owes his wife. But we also say that ona means time, which means even though the husband might be perfectly fine coming home, having a sandwich, going out to Beis Medrash, coming back, drinking a cup of coffee, going to sleep, saying goodbye in the morning, living life that way, but a wife needs a certain amount of time. And even though a husband might not need it, and usually a husband does, usually a husband also needs time to share his life with his wife. Even if a husband thinks he doesn't need that time, yes, he owes it to his wife to give as much time as they both need. He has needs for time together, and she has needs for time together, and that amount of time they should try to find to have to converse. And yes, definitely there will be times when he does it out of consideration for her. You will find that there are times that your wife is going out of her mind because of things going on at work, because of things going on with the kids, because of things going on with her parents or her siblings. And you know that in order to help her work through this, she needs time. So as a good husband, you're going to invite her to go for a walk. You're going to invite her out for breakfast or lunch or supper or whatever your schedules and your finances permit. But yeah, not because you feel like you want to talk, but part of the partnership is you're there for her. And on a steady basis, like the Talmud says, every night a woman has cherished moments, which are the moments before a couple fall asleep and they speak in the bedroom. The talk, the conversation that they have before they fall asleep, the Gemara says are a woman's cherished moments. And aside from that, there are other times during the day and depending on where life takes you.
Where in the Gemara do they talk about this?
So the Gemara says, there's a verse in the prophets, Neshei Amit Garishun Mibeita Anugah. The prophet is lamenting the moral decay in Israel. And the prophet says, you chase out my women from their house of pleasures. So the Talmud says, what's that verse talking about? The verse is talking about the following scenario. There's a couple where the woman is impure. She's having her period. And they cannot be intimate, so their beds are separate. So along comes someone and asks them, can I spend the night by you guys? He could figure out an alternative, and he knows in the days of the Talmud, so when a woman was defiled, so you knew it because they kept the laws of purity. So she had separate vessels, meaning it was a part of life. It was part of society. It wasn't today, it's immodest that people should know where a woman's holding. It's no one's business. It only has relevance to one thing, whether the husband and wife can be intimate or not. So when it only has relevance to that, it's something that we keep private. It's no one's business. But in the days of the Talmud, it had relevance to many other things, to sacrifices that she brought, to things that she touched. It had other relevance. It was a part of life. It wasn't kept private like today. So this guy, he knows that he can ask them to spend the night by them, and then they have one room. He'll be in the bedroom with them. Or he could ask another friend who he's less friendly with, but he could also spend the night there. The Talmud says about him, the prophet is lamenting. Because when the verse describes, you chase my women out of their house of pleasures, the house of pleasures is describing that conversation that a woman can have with her husband. When she has him to herself, that it's the end of the day, they're going to sleep, even though their beds are separate. There's nothing intimate happening here. The Talmud says that conversation, the time that she could have alone with her husband, if you take that away from her, because you ask to spend the night over there, so she won't feel comfortable having the same conversation with him. So that, the Talmud says, that's what the prophet is lamenting. So that's where it describes it. It shows us the sensitivity that Chazal wanted us to have. A friend of mine once said that a modern day application would be if you see a couple sitting on the bus talking, and you come and sit right next to them, meaning they know you, so they're uncomfortable talking next to you. Or you come and you start talking to the husband, so now the wife can't talk to him anymore, right? I don't know if that's a real halachically modern-day application, but the idea is still, that's where Chazal described it. Okay, so what did we see today? We saw the importance of seeing the positive. We discussed the 8 or 9 steps to giving criticism. Don't enforce the positive. Find a positive time to say it. Describe a specific instance and not a recurring event. Give multiple ways to get out of it. Take upon yourself to do something equally hard and compliment every slight improvement. We discussed the importance of seeing the positive improvement. We discussed the basis to every argument must be that understanding that the other side means well, they don't mean me harm. We discussed framing conversation, what men are always talking about, what women are always talking about. Women, do you love me? Men, do you respect me? We discussed the need that women have to know what's going on, to be a part of what's going on. And we discussed the patience, and that when you act impatiently, you usually pay a greater price. You end up not getting what you wanted, and you pay a greater price. And remember that the Mishnah says, when is a person wicked? When they didn't even take a step. And you're never going to find that. People are always taking a step. The reason we're frustrated is because they haven't taken enough steps. But one step they've always taken. And you see the Mishnah applauds a person who goes all the way to Beis Medrash but doesn't learn a word, because at least he went. He tried. He didn't have enough self-control. He wasn't focused, but he tried. We said a good practice is if a person takes upon himself that every day he'll give 50 compliments. And from that he starts learning how to have appreciation and how to diminish his criticism.